हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Prakriti, the unconscious principle. The Shankya system holds that the entire world, including the body, mind, and senses, is dependent upon, limited by, and produced by the combination of certain effects. Various other schools of philosophy, such as Charvak, Buddhism, Jainism, Nyaya, and Vaisheshika, maintain that atoms of earth, water, fire, and air are the material causes of the world. But according to the Shankya system, material atoms cannot produce the subtler products of nature, such as mind, intelligence, and ego. Therefore, one has to seek elsewhere for that cause from which gross objects and the subtler aspects are derived. If one examines nature, it becomes obvious that a cause is subtler than its associated effect, and a cause pervades its effect. For example, when a seed develops into a tree, whatever latent quality the seed contains will be found in that tree. The ultimate cause of the world must also be a latent principle of potential, and it must be uncaused, eternal, and all-pervading. It must be more subtle than the mind and intellect, and at the same time, it must contain all the characteristics of the external objects as well, as well as of the senses, mind, and intellect. In Shankya philosophy, this ultimate cause is called Prakriti. To prove its existence, Shankya offers the following five arguments. First, it is accepted that all the objects of the world are limited and dependent upon something else. So there must be an unlimited and independent cause for their existence. The cause is Prakriti. Right. So it means you have something that's limited and something dependent. That means it must come from something that's unlimited and something that's independent. Right. That's the principle that they're establishing. Second, all the objects of the world possess a common characteristic. They're capable of producing pleasure, pain, or indifference. Therefore, something must exist as the cause of the universe that possesses the characteristics of pleasure, pain, and indifference. Right. In other words, they're establishing is that if there's qualities in something, that means its origin must also have those qualities. It can't be otherwise. The cause, the effect is pervaded by its cause, right? In other words, whatever is the, you have a reason for something, you perform an activity, then what the result, that result then will have the qualities of why you did it will be there in that result, right? It won't be different. You have wood. From the wood, then you carving it, then you make a chair. So the chair has all the qualities of the wood, right? But the wood is having all those different, means it, the source of those qualities is the wood, not the chair, right? Because then you can take the chair and carve it into something else. So it's not the chair that's yours, it's the wood. It's because of the wood you could do those things. Does that make sense? Yes. The unmanifest aspect of the effect is already in the cause. That was what was established, is that there's a connection between them. Because some will say there is no effect in the cause. It's when you, by performance of the thing, then it becomes manifest. Because they're working on a grosser principle. You know, so it's just like, okay, you take the wood and by, or making it manifest, I mean, by going through the process of carving, then you get a chair. But chair doesn't exist in wood. But the point is that it's not the chair that's the thing, because you could do anything with the wood.
You know what I'm saying? So there's, it's just these are two like major bases of philosophy. Does the effect exist in the cause? Does the effect exist in the cause before it's manifest or not? And if it does, then also we see the cause is manifest in the effect. So it's important to note these things, because Krishna being the origin of everything, that means everything that's manifest still works on the same principles as his nature. You know, I mean, there still is the principle of existence. There's action, you know, knowledge about that action. And then there is some, from performing the action, then there is some happiness or something that's gained from it. Some external result is gained, and some pleasure, pain, or something is generated. Because that's the way he is. He is Satchidananda. That means everything will have in it those elements. The spiritual is obvious as Satchidananda, but in the material world, the sat becomes ignorance, the chit becomes passion, and the ananda becomes goodness. But it still works on the same formulas. Right? Just because of the nature, then it appears that they're slightly different. They give different results. In the spiritual world, the one is always happy because it's always connected with Krishna. Material world, because the existence principle is not Krishna, the existence is ignorance. Therefore, due to ignorance, then the pleasures and pains of this world come up. Right? So they're not connected with Krishna, so they're a disturbance rather than something that's uplifting. Because they're based on ignorance. If you replace that ignorance with proper understanding, proper knowledge, that's the basis of your existence. Right? Devotional activities, service to the Lord, these are the basis of your activities. Then, whatever activities you perform, they won't carry that problem. Anything that comes, it may look like pleasure and pain come, but it's all in connection with Krishna. So it's not a disturbance, it's uplifting. Right? So here then they're establishing that it must come from there. So we see there's a difference in the Mayavads, because the Mayavads, they're not doing with Parinamavad. They're doing with, what do you call it? Vivartavad, that it's an illusion that it looks like it's changed. Because it doesn't exist. The rope looks like it's a snake, but it's not actually a snake. It's an illusion that it's a snake. It doesn't actually turn into one. You think it's a snake. Right? So then the problem comes is then the Brahman has no qualities, but everything that's produced from it does. And so this illusion, the Brahman having only, you know, no quality, you know, other than eternality, then basically this illusion is able to produce all this unlimited variety and everything else, and all these pleasure and pain and everything like that. But if it's producing pleasure and pain, even though it's temporary, it's still producing pleasure. So how is that? So that means the Brahman has no qualities, technically can't produce any pleasure. So by being Brahman realized, it would not make you happy. You know what I'm saying? So they're looking for happiness, but this concept of happiness that they're looking for is actually based on Prakriti. Because according to their philosophy, Brahman doesn't have any quality, so happiness is a quality, so it doesn't have happiness. So they say Brahmananda means ananda is an adjective of Brahman. Right? It's defining Brahman, the happiness of Brahman. Right, so that's the difficulty, is that that's attributing qualities, but because they want to be happy, they don't even notice their mistake. It's inherent that they have to be happy, and their happiness comes from a superior origin, and so their origin is Brahman. So therefore, I must be happy when I'm in contact with it, which is true, but it's not true according to their philosophy. It's true according to our philosophy. Like that, you know. So that's it's difficult. So we see here it's important to establish this, because then it means the qualities of this world are coming from qualities of something higher. But unfortunately, after having established all this, they'll probably end up with some, you know, Mayavad thing anyway. So like Shankya and Nyaya and Vaisheshika, then they've already done that. They have established that there's a supreme person. Right, and he is in control, he's doing everything according to his will, but ultimately, then they're trying for Brahman, you know, just merging into the Brahman. you know, extinguishing their existence. So the interaction with Godhead isn't a part of their, it's not important, though they accept it, that he's there. So we'll find out here what they do. So beyond conscious principle, the Prakriti. So everything is there in quality. That means it must be greater than these things, that it contains all these elements. Right? Because the Prakriti is the cause of all the material manifestation, it, by that definition, has to contain all the qualities that are in the effect. It means the material manifestation is the effect. That means Prakriti, as the cause, has to have all those qualities. Right? But by the same philosophy, then, as Prakriti, the manifestation, it's also a manifestation. It's an energy. That means it, as an effect, has to have been originated in a cause that has all those qualities also. Right? So therefore, all the senses, sense objects, the forms, the shapes, all these different things have to have originated, therefore, in the cause of Prakriti, which is the Supreme Lord. Generally, they never want to take it that far anyway, but, you know, that's the difficulty.
Third, all the objects of the world have a potential to produce something else or to convert themselves into something else. Therefore, their cause must also have the same potential.
Right? It means you take a tree, you convert it into a chair. You transform it into a chair. And then the chair can transform into firewood or, you know, anything else, you know, a paperweight or anything. You can turn into that. So they can keep changing. That means then the material energy has the nature to be changeable. Right? Unlimitedly mutable. Like that.
That is, okay. Fourth, in the process of evolution, an effect arises from its cause, and in dissolution, it is reabsorbed or dissolved into its origin. The particular objects of experience must therefore arise from a certain cause, which must in turn have arisen from a certain cause, and so on until one reaches the prime cause of the creative process itself. A similar process takes place in involution or annihilation. Here, physical elements are broken down into atoms. Atoms are dissolved into gross energies, and gross energies into finer ones, until all these dissolve into the unmanifest one. That unmanifest one is called Prakriti, the primordial nature.
Right? So, in other words, you have all the things here, they go back into atoms. So the difference is the Vaisheshika in that they stop there. That the atoms themselves being the basis of everything, then that's okay. You defined atoms, okay. But the problem is they say they're eternal in that form. But we know from here is that those get reabsorbed back into, those go back into Mahat. And then Mahat goes back into Prakriti. And then Prakriti gets back, reabsorbed back into the Lord. Right? So the Lord then manifests the external potency, the general potency of the Prakriti as Pradhan. Then entering that Pradhan then separates into the various elements. You know, that potential as the Mahat. Then they're manifest, you know, in Brahma's creation. Like that. And so then those transform into different things into this. So each one is moving in and out of their various origins. You know, something comes from the earth, it turns into a tree. Tree turns into something else, it rots, turns back into earth. So everything goes back into its origin, right? But then that origin goes back into something. So the earth is manifest, all these, but it's coming from the atoms. But then those atoms go back farther. So the problem is in a philosophy, it's not that it's technically wrong. It's just, it's wrong in that it doesn't take the equation far enough. You know, it's just like this. Two kids go up. He hit me, right? So he's not wrong in saying that this, you know, kid A says kid B hit me. And so therefore, that's a fight. Why are you fighting? Then you call them over, and then you call them over. Then kid A says, kid B, he hit me. It is true, kid B did hit kid A. But what he's leaving out of the explanation is that he, kid A, first hit kid B. Right? That's left out. So that's why then the thing actually is, you know, not useful, because you don't have the correct thing, right? Does that make sense? So, you know, it's a standard, means we have a particular perspective or something what we want. So by nature, we always tend to leave out those parts that don't quite match. You know, just like, you know, the modern scientists, something that doesn't match their theory, even if there's overwhelming evidence, they'll just leave it out. You know, Sariputta was pointing out that there's tons of evidence of modern man, you know, side by side at whatever age they have found, you know, Neanderthal or whatever it is that, you know, they're always there. Modern man as such has always been there. But they'll always say, oh no, something wrong, there was a crack in the earth and the modern man fell into it, or, you know, somebody dug a hole in that and then, you know, somebody fell into it, or, you know, something else and somebody fell into it, you know, so it's always there. So this is always the problem, is that they won't accept it. So they only take their philosophy a certain distance that agrees with what they want and what their goal is. So these are no different. Right? Just that they're more developed and more refined, that's all. But it's not that they're not, they don't have the same problems. So when you take any of these things and take it farther, then you end up in Krishna consciousness. But when you don't, then they stay separate as their own philosophies. Otherwise, they're all part of the Vedanta philosophy. They have their place. You know, we'll say there's atoms of earth. Those who create the things that are here, they go back into the atoms of earth, so they're manifest and unmanifest. But to leave it that is eternal, no, because then the material energy is manifest and unmanifest, so when it's unmanifest, those atoms aren't there. You know, so they're not worried about beyond that. They're just worried that it's that element's always there. Even if it's disillusion, they'll say the disillusion will always, those atoms will be there. So they just are thinking in this way. They don't understand that individuality is not there in the pradhan. It's just potential.
Right. Fifth, if one attempts to go further and imagine the cause of this ultimate cause, he will land himself in the fallacy of infinite regression. Ultimately, one has to stop somewhere and identify a cause as the first cause of the universe. In Shankara philosophy, that supreme root cause of the world is called Prakriti,
right? So therefore, it's technically a form of materialism, right? Because if the cause of everything is the material energy, it's materialism, just like Shankara is also. It's not saying that all the atoms came from God or the souls came from God. No, it's all just there. It's part of the just that energy. So they're actually, all of these ones, they're all, how do you say, technically parts of materialism, which is varieties of karma.
So they're a form of Shakta in a way?
Shakta is a form of materialism. Materialism is the greater picture. Right? Karma is the greater picture. Within karma, then you have those where the material nature is the cause. Then you have those who go back to a person, you know, where how you say, Kali or Durga, that is the cause, but still she is material energy. Right? Like that. Then you have those who are a little bit more subtle, which borderlines both sides. Is so your positivism, your any kind of, you know, these varieties of materialism, your idealism, where everything's just ideas, you feel it, you think it, therefore that's what's here. So it's just all combination of ideas and like that. You know, so it's what you know people see on there. So it has the element. It's kind of like karma, but it has the elements of like the jnana, of its illusion, the vivartavad. It's not actually there, you're just imagining it there. But because somehow or another, who's arranging it, everybody imagines it the same way. That's another thing, you know. So when Beethoven, you know, performed his Ninth Symphony, why did everyone clap? Who arranged that everybody, you know, in their thoughts, all it came out the same way, you know, like that. So these kind of things, as it mentions here, is that you have the problem of infinite regression. So all of these philosophies will stop at some point. You have to stop somewhere. So they'll stop in Prakriti. Vaisheshika will stop in atoms, like that. So will Gotama. They stop there. Otherwise, you keep going. The atoms, so they don't bother with what you see here. You break it down on that. The point is whatever is the smallest thing, that's the atom. That's where it stops. Atom means you can't break it down further. But it's true, you can't break it down further, but what they have missed out is it can be absorbed in something else. So when Mahavishnu breathes in, it does disappear. right? So it doesn't get broken down. So you can't be broken down any farther. That makes it an atom. Otherwise, then it's the same problem, infinite regression, and then it doesn't get anywhere. You know, there's no advantage, yes.
Here the cause is Prakriti. So, because usually the cause would be seen as a masculine, but in their philosophy it looks like the cause is a feminine here.
That we'll see as it unfolds. I'm just saying, they're saying that. Well, we're going to see what's next. Now we're going to go into the gunas. Right? Gunas, then they'll get into Purusha, which is consciousness. So we'll see there is how they, what is their relationship between, you know, the soul, God, and Prakriti. Because that's then where you actually understand their philosophy. Yes.
What's the problem with the theory of infinite regression?
Because where do you end it? So then you just think, well, that, you know, if that breaks down, then there's this. Then back breaks down, then there's this. And you'll just be doing that for the rest of your lifetime. So to be able to work with it, you have to stop at some point. So it's not, the point is not that it's not regressing, but there has to be a cause. Right? Because there's cause and effect, so everything's working on that. So even if it is infinite, you jump to the end and say, okay, this is where it ends. Like that. So all the infinite amounts of, you know, going down like this, you know, what is it? There's some number you get, and you always get 1.666666, and it just goes on eternally. So, you know, you just go to where the end is, you know. That means when, you know, Mahavishnu breathes in, then the calculation stops, right? You know, so then, does that make some sense? So otherwise, how do you work with it? You can't function if that is going on. So at some point, you have to, you know what I'm saying? So that's why we say, okay, we're going to deal up, you know, up to, you know, one decimal point or two or four, or, you know, they set a limit. Because otherwise they don't, you know, okay, you know, everybody has to write down the thing. So, you know, who gets the A is the one who wrote down the most sixes after the decimal point. You know, it doesn't work like that. You just come up with that, you know it's one of those numbers, so you just stop there. Right? Otherwise, how do you function? How do you work? Right? Is that okay? Okay. So that's the supreme cause of the world is Prakriti. But whether they're accepting what's the position of God and all that, that hasn't been established yet. Just like Vaisheshika, atoms are the source of everything. Right? But at the same time, there is a God. And he's in control of it all. But they don't get into him being the origin of all that. The gunas. Prakriti is not to be comprehended as merely the atomic substance of matter, nor can it be taken as a conscious principle behind the material substance. And it is not a hypothetical construct of the mind, a creation of philosophy and nothing more. Prakriti means literally exceptional ability. It is the wonderful nature out of which the vast material world and all its levels of intricate permutation take shape. Prakriti is characterized by three gunas of Sattva, Raja, and Tamas. Right? So it's not being going by the atomic element is what makes it. It's beyond that. So it's the ability that anything can come out of it. Whatever is perceivable in the material world, whatever is there in the material world. So it's not, you're just thinking it like that, like the Mayavadis and others are thinking. It actually exists. Right? All the forms exist, everything exists, they may go back to atoms, or the atoms go back into the Prakriti. So the Prakriti itself is the source of all these manifestations. So it is then taken as the cause. Right? And everything that you see and interact with and experience and feel and that's all effect. Right? And one effect can transform into another because the cause that it comes from has that ability. Does that make sense? Why one thing in this world can transform into something else is because if you go back, the Prakriti has the ability to manifest as anything. That means that whatever line is coming out of the Prakriti, it has the ability to transform into so many different manifestations. Right? There'll be a limit to it, but it can be done as a lot of things. Does that make sense?
They're saying it's not a conscious principle.
No, it's not conscious because Purusha is conscious. Right?
So like
Prakriti is the unconscious principle, and Purusha is consciousness.
So that would be a little different than our philosophy, because in our philosophy, Prakriti is somewhere.
That's there, but what we're saying, right now we're just seeing what is there, is that they're just going to up to a certain point. See, we're trying to see what is the mechanics of what they're using here. And in these mechanics, then you get more of an understanding of what's in ours, because we know then it's a person. But still, that person is still coming from the Supreme Person. That's what we're saying, is they only go up to a certain point and stop. Right? Because they have a philosophy, and that philosophy then only needs to understand up to a particular point. That's the point. That's the thing. If you only need to go to Brahman, you only need to understand a certain amount of the philosophy to get there. Right? By performance of, unattached duty, you will get freed from material energy. Right? So that if that's our philosophy, if that's all the more we want, then all we have to do is present those elements from the Shastras that do that. You understand? All we have to do is bring out the elements of Naishkarmya, bring out the elements of duty, bring out the elements of, you know, action and reaction and all these different things. And so, and the process by which we have become attached so that we can know how we become unattached. Right? Then, coming to the point of Naishkarmya, of proper performance of duties without attachment to the results, we will be freed from material contamination. And then we stop there. You understand? So, where those qualities come from, why there is qualities, we're not actually interested, because all we want is to get out of the material world. You understand? So therefore, our philosophy doesn't have to be beyond those information. That's how they can take, how they can be from the Veda and actually quoting, you know, appropriate verses, but they're only taking it up to a certain level. To say Shiva is the supreme in the material world, he's the master of material energy, he's in control of it, he's aloof from it, he is the, you can say yes. But to stop there and not acknowledge where he comes from, then that's a problem in the philosophy. You understand? So you only say, you have your point, you want to enjoy in the material world, or you want to get out of the material world, and you think by getting out of the material world you enjoy. One of these two. There's not a third kind of option. Right? So one of these two, and depending upon which one it is, your philosophy is going to be constructed in a particular way. Right? And depending upon whether there's a little bit more, you know, in karma or gyan, or, you know, what's your mix between the two, then you're going to have different elements that you're going to bring out. And so the Vedic philosophies will pull them from the Vedas. Right? Well, the modern won't. So they'll be even more speculative and more, you know, less, more shallow. Well, these go quite deep because the points they're making are very subtle and very deep points. But they don't go deep enough. They don't go to the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? Yes.
That mix that an individual might be attracted to, is that due to the mix of the three modes?
Yes, that'll be due to their mix of modes and natures. In other words, if there's, you know, there's more ignorance or more passion, it depends also probably the way it's manifest. Because ignorance can be you're more into gross, so that could mean, you know, you're more into things of this world. But at the same time, ignorance is also the basis for the Brahman understanding, because they go back to just being sat, just being existing. And so, because of ignorance, they don't know the real existence, so they try to extinguish their existence. They think that's possible. So that's all based on ignorance. That's why generally Shiva is their deity. So Shaivites are technically jnanis. They're into extinguishing the nature of the soul. While Shaktas aren't into that. They're just into enjoying material energy. Like that. Does that make sense? So they're just different basically, the mundane manifestation has of philosophy has a lot of varieties, but they still come back to karma and jnana. You know, they don't really have anything else like that. There's yoga, okay, but that's actually technically part of karma. You know, like that. So it's, yeah, is that okay? So do we understand what we're dealing with here? We're seeing the mechanics of it because they're very cleverly constructed. One, you need to know them for if you're working with those who don't have an improper understanding, you know how they're constructing their ideas so that you can deconstruct them for them. Otherwise, it's also these same constructions are used within the Vaishnava philosophy, but the Vaishnava philosophy takes it further than what they're going. They make further connections. But that subtlety of being able to work at that level then means you're able to then see whatever little fine points or details there are in one's thinking that are distracting one from Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Right? So we see the point where so we're looking here. So in other words, you're looking at the philosophy for what it is and accepting it from that, though we understand that these authors haven't taken it far enough. But the point is it's still based on the Veda. So that means it's part of our philosophy. It's just which part? Up to what point? You know what I'm saying? So these other ones, the logic is very good, the understanding of, you know, making things and taking them apart is very nice, but at the same time as they go farther, all these atoms go back into the Mahat. Mahat goes into Pradhan, Pradhan goes into Mahavishnu. So all that they leave out. But up to that point, they're doing fine. Whereas the problem is then it's not enough. Just like, let's say you take somebody who's from a very traditional, proper Brahmin family, but they're not devotees, right? So they go to the market and they buy some potatoes. So is there any problem? Would we have any problem with that up to now? No. They take it back. They wash those potatoes very nicely. We have a problem? Now we're getting to problem, right? Like that. Okay. Then, okay, maybe we don't get into problem here. Then they're going to make sure all the pots and pans, the kitchen's clean and everything, and they're going to see to all the subtle cleanliness that they're not, you know, sticking their fingers in this and that, which they shouldn't, or, you know, after they eat, that they're washing their hands and that, right? Now we're getting into problem, no? No? Why not? Well, that's just you're going to start having problems at this point. Okay, so now, okay, then they take it and they cook it according to nice traditional recipes. We have a problem?
No.
Then they're going to take it out of the pots and all that, you know, because the cleanliness of the eating is different from the cooking, and they're going to put it into separate pots for serving. Is there a problem?
No.
Okay. Now they're going to take it, you know, take it into the table. They're going to, you know, do the mantras of that, eating the rice and all that, offering the life airs and all that. That part we have no problem. Okay. So, and then they're going to eat. So where's the problem? They didn't offer it to Krishna. In other words, they went through the whole process of what we would do to cook something for Krishna. But they didn't offer it to Krishna. You understand? So it was all Vedic, it was all Brahminical standards. But it didn't go far enough, it wasn't offered to Krishna. You understand? So if you understand this whole process, then you can understand all the different technicalities of cleanliness and preparation and cooking technique and all these different things. You can learn all that. Point is you have to add Krishna. So that's why we can go out in India and learn from so many people about the Vedic culture. Problem is they don't take it all the way to Krishna. If they don't take it all the way to Krishna, we say it's all bogus. Right? So you could say ultimately yes, it's bogus, but the technique they used itself in itself is not bogus. The bogus part is not connecting to Krishna.
The culture is not bogus.
No. So that's the point in these is that technically these are where these things are described. Right? In other words, anybody who is dealing with the Vaishnavas, when they're dealing with the, you know, breaking down the material energy and its functioning interaction, that's Shankhya. Why do we need to, you know, reinvent something? It's already there. If we want to deal with logic and argument, we don't have to make up our own system. Gotama has already done it. But the problem is Gotama has only done that much. But it's fine. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is these are all parts of the Vedic, but they don't take it to Krishna. That's what makes it useless. So if that principle is understood, that means whatever you're doing, it's not necessarily the technique. There may be some techniques that aren't approved, but it's not specifically the technique. It's not being connected to Krishna that's the problem. Does that make sense? So someone's doing something, okay, they're doing something, but do they connect it to Krishna? That's the real, that's where you actually tell. Right? So that's why when somebody starts something, then okay, then where are they going with this? What's their purpose? What's their, like that. Then if it gets to Krishna, fine. If it doesn't get to Krishna, then there's a problem. There's a problem. Prakriti is characterized by the three gunas of sattva, rajas, and tamas. The word guna may be translated as a quality or attribute of prakriti. But it is important to note that the three gunas are not to be taken merely as surface aspects of material nature. They are, rather, the intrinsic nature of prakriti. The balanced combination of sattva, rajas, and tamas is prakriti, and thus they cannot be prakriti's external attributes or qualities. They are called gunas, that is, ropes, because they are intertwined like three strands of rope that bind the soul to the world. One can say that a rope is the name for three intertwined strands, but if one analyzes the strand separately, he does not see the rope. In a similar way, if he analyzes the guna separately, one will not apprehend prakriti, since it is a balanced state of the three gunas. Right? So they're taking the gunas as qualities of material nature. So in sattva, rajas, and tamas, they are the qualities of material nature. Right? Just like in the internal potency, you know, then you see sambit, sandini, ladini. Those are the intrinsic nature, how the internal potency works. So its reflection or its shadow then is the material energy, which is intrinsic qualities are goodness, passion, ignorance. It's a reflection of the same qualities. Right? The sandini goes into ignorance, sambit into passion, and hladini into, or chit, you know, ananda into goodness. Right? So it's the same element. Right? So, yeah. So it'll be there. So you can analyze it separately, but that won't give you an understanding of the material energy. You have to see all three of them together. Because as a rope is made of three strands and it's twined together, right? So in the same way as what the three modes of nature, them being twined together, that combination, you can understand the qualities of the prakriti. Right? So you can study each one individually, but then you'll only actually understand when you put them together. Then you understand the relationship, how they do. So what Shankhya is saying here, and like in its perfect balance, then that's prakriti. You know, and then what we're seeing is these things that are out of balance. So this must be some key to where they're trying to take everything. According to Shankhya philosophy, sattva, rajas, and tamas are the underlying qualities from which the universe we perceive is derived. These gunas can be inferred from the fact that all features in the material world, external and internal, both the physical elements and the mind, are found to possess the capability of producing pleasure, pain, or indifference. The same object may be pleasing to one person, painful to another, and of no concern to a third. The same beautiful girl is pleasing to her boyfriend, painful to another girl who is attracted to the same boy, and of no concern to many other people not involved. Right? You have the... Was it the same kind of example? Prabhupada tells about, so also it depends on perceptions, how you're looking at it. So he says you have the young, attractive girl. So to a young man, then she's very, very important, very attractive in that. To the sage is something that's not attractive, and to the dog, you know, when she dies, is something to eat, like that. So everybody sees in their own perspective, like that. The same thing. Right. So here also it looks like this pleasure plane and indifference is going to be something that is very important to the philosophy, because your pleasure will be your goodness, your pain will be your passion, and your indifference will be your ignorance. Right. So there's going to be something here that's coming up, because now they brought this up a few times about pain, pleasure, and indifference. So everything can give that. So that's showing, that's coming from the mode. So that means the material energy is working on these principles. Because anything manifest can have those three. So that must mean that pleasure, pain, and indifference is an inherent quality in material energy, in the prakriti. Right? And so that's manifest to us through the three modes. But those qualities of the modes, those are inherently there in the material energy. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
Part of the 24 elements.
It means we understand it's part of the 24 elements, but at the same time, it's how the 24 elements are going to manifest. Because each of the elements you can establish according to these three modes. All the creation is happening through the more. The mind is coming from goodness. The intelligence from passion. The ego from ignorance. Like that, you know. So air and ether will be coming from goodness, fire is compassion, you know. Then the water and the light coming from like this. Does that make sense? So you can get these basis of these. Yeah. So then.
Why passion is pain? Because it's just a hard work to get something.
Pain because anything in passion ends in pain. Only something in goodness can be maintained. The pleasure. Right, because indifference means it's not important, so it's not even something you consider. So, but passion means you're analyzing, you're trying to decide, you want this, don't want this, attracted, not want, like this and that.
And you work hard to get it, you don't get it for a long time, then you are getting pain when you do it.
You're getting pain if you don't get it, but at the same time, even if you get it, it still will give you pain at some point, because you've gotten it through passion, not through goodness.
And it's a lot of pain to get it.
It's pain to gain it, but it's once you get it, it's also trouble. Right? It means mode of goodness, we're not talking about pain. Mode of ignorance, that's indifference. So these two...
There's pain also in this? I mean, like people are depressed and this and that.
This is what we were discussing this the other day, is that this kind of point is fine. But at the same time, as the level that we're discussing here, you have to be able to perceive the subtle. You know what I'm saying? So ignorance, if someone is very ignorant, is he interested in something or attracted by something? Or is he indifferent?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the person in ignorance is indifferent. The person in goodness is happy. So what does that leave? The only two that haven't been connected by the dots are passion and pain, right? And so we know that work done in the mood of goodness is bitter in the beginning and, you know, pleasurable at the end. Those things done in the mode of passion are pleasurable in the beginning and painful at the end. You know what I'm saying? Because pain is fire. Goodness isn't fire. I mean, happiness isn't fire. Pain is fire. It burns. So passion is fire. Ignorance is just there. So, you know, so what? Here's this rock. We'll be. It just sits here. You know, so what do we care? You know what I'm saying? We're not interested. So it's not even there in our thoughts. It's not there. So there's an ignorance of it. We don't even know it exists. Only since I pulled it out, then it became a rock here. You know, one that we would note. Otherwise, we wouldn't notice. There's rocks over there. Nice. You understand? There's always going to be an overlap because everything is a mix of the modes. But the point is that these three qualities are coming out because of this. So we have to be able to see. The Maya, the impersonalists or the Mayavadis, they're trying to get to what state? They're trying to get rid of passion, right? Yeah. And so they're trying to be eternally situated in not existent. But their principle that they're working on is existence. So existence is found in ignorance in the material world. So their idea of being happy means you're so indifferent to everything here that you don't even care. So therefore you're happy. Because all pain is coming out of the material world. You give up dealing with the material world, you won't be happy. You won't be unhappy. So that not being unhappy constantly, that is their definition of happiness. If I'm not disturbed by the material world at any time, then I'm happy. But what is that based on? It's not based on knowledge that I'm servant of God. It's okay. Based on knowledge, you could say it's knowledge that I am Brahman. But so is the material energy that you're trying to get away from. It's also Brahman. Right? It's everything. If everything's Brahman, that means all of it's Brahman. Right? It's all Brahman, but somehow there's ignorance. I mean, there's illusion. How did this illusion come up as separate from Brahman? If everything's Brahman, it means the illusion is Brahman also. Right? But so they take it as a separate thing. So that the same thing is that, you know, the Krishna is just God, is, you know, the Supreme, and then this material world works separately. Because if they accept that they're connected, they have a problem. Because if this world of pleasure and pain, and that is connected with Brahman, that means then, you know, they'll see Brahman has a defect, rather than we have a defect. So they keep them separate. So you always have, there's the Supreme, and then there's the interactions of the material manifestation that the Supreme is not actually dealing with. And so, at least in there, they leave Brahman in his pristine state, and although they, you know, say he's qualityless, but leave Brahman in his state and say, we're the idiots that, you know, make all this happen here. The Christians aren't so kind. God has made everything, but he's lost control. He doesn't actually control all this. And so things go wrong. It's actually his fault, but it's controlled by someone else. So why isn't it their fault? You know, if God is great, why didn't he stop that from happening? But you've already said he doesn't control it anyway, and someone else controls it. So then what do you want? You know what I'm saying? So it's a problem, these things. It always comes back to us. These qualities of the girl appearing in relation to other people around her arise from the gunas that underlie the manifested world. This example can help one see how the cause of all phenomena, Prakriti, contains all the characteristics found in worldly objects. Right? So in other words, in the same way as that attractiveness that's there, that pain that is there, and no concern, these are all elements of the material energy. Right? Right. In other words, just the pradhan element is just there's no concern. There's just nothing, just existence. Then the mahat, then you bring in that element of that goodness and now that, and then the manifestation that will be your passion, like that. So you'll have these three stages anyway, even in the material manifestation. Right. Starts with ignorance, moves into goodness, then ends up as passion, like that. Does that make sense? So they're all there contained within the material energy. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. See, because then they'll have a problem here. It's just saying there that the earth means maybe later it'll come in a concept of God, but the early those in Shankya philosophy don't work with it because it means every effect has to have the qualities of the cause. You know, the cause is already in the effect, and so then there's that change. But since the material energy is mutiful in all these, and God is beyond all that, therefore God can't be the cause of the material energy. So even if he does exist, it would have nothing to do with him anyway. And since we're dealing with the material energy and trying to get out of it or deal with it. Therefore, our concern is only with Prakriti. There's no need of dealing with beyond. You understand?
So, then we get to beyond.
That, but whether they even go there, so it appears that their Purusha and Prakriti that they deal with here would not actually go up to the platform. And Purusha would not mean Vishnu, it would probably mean Shiva.
Well, there it's Jiva in the table.
They have
Purusha or Jiva.
Okay, but then that's the Jiva, he's the Purusha, and then the Prakriti there. That's also, we'll work with that also. Because he's just a small Purusha. But then at the same time, it's that principle of Purusha has to come from somewhere. So unless they put the soul as coming from God, they have him coming from the energy, then that would have to come from Shiva. Like that. So if they stay within material energy, then they're Shaktas, and if they move out of material energy, then they'll be Shaivites. So stay tuned and we'll find out.